Tales of a well-established lesbian. Chapter 33. I woke up in a new year, in a new city, ready for a new day. Despite an inordinate amount of bubbles I'd consumed the night before, I'm remarkably fresh. The excitement of New York is keeping my hangover at bay. It's a big day today. We're going to go top of the Rock and the Empire State Building. It's all about the views. Ashley is slightly more layered up today, so we're off to a good start. It was another day full of classic New York sights. I won't bang on about them, but I will say the lobby of the Empire State Building is ridiculous. And they had the classiest and most enormous Christmas tree ever. Very impressive. Now, you already know I wanted to see everything, or as much as humanly possible. And I wanted to make sure that Ash saw everything she wanted to see as well. I was about doing the most. And in all the months of conversation about our trip, I'd been very vocal about my wants. I thought we'd work together quite well to make sure we covered off all the things. After all, Ash had won the trip. It was her trip. It was important to me that I didn't take over, but that I made it as easy as possible. Hence the lists and the maps and all the other stuff. But as day two wore on, there was an atmosphere developing between Ash and I. Similar vibes had occurred yesterday evening, but I think the impact of our visit to the Ground Zero Memorial had kind of pushed them aside. And then, of course, it was New Year's Eve. But by the end of day two, even a shopping spree in Old Navy couldn't help me out, no matter how big and nice and cosy the cardigan we got her was. Back at the hotel, I was about to find out exactly why Ashley was having such a terrible time in New York. You see, as good as I am at many practical things, choosing the appropriate clothing, packing said clothing, planning logistics so you don't have to double back on yourself or miss anything along the way, and other such useful things, I am not good at remembering how important some things are to other people. Like, oh, you know, eating and drinking. I mean, it's not intentional. I am never actually trying to starve you. I promise. I kind of forget. Because for me, food is not an experience, right? It is just fuel. And I can operate on fumes. Literally. A fag and a can of Red Bull will do for me. If someone invents a tablet that replaces food, I tell you, I'm going to be first in that queue. Just for the reduction in the washing up, if nothing else. Not forgetting that I'm hella fussy too. You have never seen somebody look at a KFC as suspiciously as I eyed my non-familiar looking American fried chicken. So, I'm disinterested in food, and I am capable of surviving on cigarettes, sugar, and a packet of crisps a day. And I hate going to new restaurants. Despite my butch bravado, I have massive levels of social anxiety, just like so many other people. Walking into anywhere alone to meet someone, very low on my list of things I like to do. We'll be meeting outside, all right? Good, lovely. Doesn't matter if it's a bar, a restaurant, a nightclub, a theatre. I just don't want to walk in alone. And I know just as well as you do that nobody's really paying any attention to me. They're all busy thinking that everyone's paying attention to them. But there have been plenty of occasions when I've attracted more attention than I'd like. The joy of being visibly butch, I guess. It might all be in my head, but when people can't instantly categorise you, they tend to pay just a little more attention to you. You know, people don't just look up and not really register you. Maybe their attention lingers while they try to figure you out. Or maybe they do the double take because their brain wasn't entirely happy with their initial assessment. So restaurants are right up there with public toilets as places fraught with potentially awkward moments for me. So aside from asking Ash if she wants a sandwich from Cat's Deli and, you know, getting some proper New York pizza from Little Italy, food hadn't featured highly on any of my lists. Very much a second thought. You know, we'll just grab and keep going. But as it gets late on night 3 of 3 of our trip, Ashley lets me know that she's gutted we'd not eaten in a particular barbecue restaurant. This is the first I've heard of it. Ashley continued she thought we'd have been going out for drinks here and then dinner there, and she'd been expecting to see a show on Broadway, maybe even go to a club. She's pissed at me because we didn't go for a drink in the Stonewall Inn. I can't even remember why we didn't, but you can bet it was my fault. So Ashley's trip to New York has been nothing like the trip to New York that she wanted. And I hear her and I get it, but it's a bit bloody late to say it now on the last night of the trip. Okay, we don't leave until like late afternoon tomorrow. We can totally still make it for barbecue at lunchtime. But there is sweet FA I can do about a show or just those other general experiences. And now it's not just Ash who's pissed off. There's no reason why we couldn't have done all of those things if she'd have said them out loud before we'd left. Hell, if she'd even said something yesterday or even this morning, we'd have been able to make it all happen. But with 16 hours left in the city on a public holiday, not a chance. And it felt like I'd failed the test. I didn't even know I was taking. She's angry with me now and New York. And I'm angry with her, but we're on holiday. So we're going to stay at that annoyed with each other level rather than escalate it. I'm not rowing with her here and now. For starters, I'm pretty damn tired. We done a lot of walking, right? And secondly, I do not want to ruin New York. We'd set aside the final few hours in the city for shopping the next morning. Souvenirs and genuine American stuff. Well, bought there anyway. For Ash, it was about finding clothes and accessories you wouldn't find at home. For me, I was in the sports section of everywhere. I was coming home with an NBA, an NFL, an NHL or an MLB shirt, if at all possible. I bloody love a good sports kit, me, right? And the Jets, the Giants, the Knicks and the Nets, they all made it into my luggage. Maybe I should have been a little less judgy about the Uggs. Retail therapy helped a little, but it's still off between Ash and I. Maybe our final destination will help. We hail a cab and I give the cabbie the name of the restaurant. Ashley's eyes light up. Ribs are had. But it's still not quite as it should be because, you know, I'm just along for the ride, finding something to nibble on. But Ash kind of wants to be able to share the experience and the food, and not being able to do that is taking it away from her. Or at least, that's how it feels from where I'm sitting. And time is getting away from us. We've got to get back to get to the airport. The doggy bag Ash leaves with is bigger than most actual dogs. At least she won't be hangry at the airport, I think. And maybe, just maybe, we'd have been in with half a chance if checking out and the airport transport hadn't been such an absolute ball ache. By the time we get to the check-in desk, Ash is already back to her passive-aggressive best. This point, bordering on aggressive. And now there's an issue with our seats. Oh, God. Ashley is spoiling for a row, and the woman at the check-in desk was doing her best to manage the situation, but it is not working. I am staying well out of it. To be honest, as long as somebody lets me get on a plane this afternoon and go home, I'm good with it. And plus, Virgin Atlantic fucking things up, it's a story I've heard before. In fact, I've read this story before. All 6 pages of my mum's letter of complaint after Virgin separated my parents' seats on their flight out to celebrate their 25th anniversary. I was just amazed our flight out had gone so smoothly. Now, to be fair to Ashley, she's not rude in these situations. She's assertive, she's direct, and she's no walkover, but she's not rude. But she's fairly close to the line right now, and I feel bad for the check-in woman. Some of the flack she is taking is clearly meant for me. Options are now being presented to Ashley. Anything to shut her up and get her gone, I suspect. The woman does that thing that check-in clerks do, they tap their keyboards. There's a seat available in first class, and she's willing to give us a substantial discount if we'd like to upgrade one of the seats. Both the check-in woman and I know whose seat we're talking about. Ashley asks for a moment to consider the options available. We step to the side. You can see it in her face. This woman wants to get on that plane and turn left like she's always done on a long haul. Despite the substantial discount, though, it is not a cheap option. I mean, we can afford it, but fuck me, it's over 600 quid just to sit 30 foot further forward on the plane. Hold up. If she's in first class, then she's mad at me in first class, and she's 30 foot away for the next 8 hours or more. Now, clearly I didn't frame my support for Ashley's upgrade as giving me a break from the angry tension she was emitting. It was all, oh, why not? Go on. This trip was a prize after all. Maybe it's just a treat you need, just to cheer yourself up. Of course I'm fine with it. Go ahead, spoil yourself one last time on the trip. Ash deliberated, prevaricated, contemplated and weighed it up. And she took her time. I mean, she really, really considered it. I know, because I had my fingers crossed the whole time. I like to think that Ashley didn't take the upgrade because she didn't want to put that between us at the end of our trip. But I'm not so sure. I think the price might have been just a little rich even for Ash. Getting off that plane, however, I wished I'd gone for the upgrade. My back was in absolute bits. The jet lag was real, and the coach home felt as long as the flight. But finally, we're back in our house. Momentary upside to having housemates. There's milk in the fridge and the heating is on. And now begins the battle to stay awake until a reasonable UK bedtime. Renee is home first, and of course she wants to know all about it. Trouble is, though, there's Ashley's version and my version, and they are not the same. It's quite literally a tale of two cities. We didn't talk to each other about the trip and all the niggles and irritations and issues we'd managed to have in just 3 days. Ashley was passive-aggressive in her tales of NYC. Me, I made jokes about her packing badly just for an excuse to go shopping. But as I listened to Ashley talk, I realised that part of the problem was that I'd behaved like quite a basic tourist. Like a person who knew that this was likely to be my one and only chance to go to New York. And I didn't care if the trip wasn't what someone else found impressive. But Ashley did. And she was still banging on about how London was better, by the way. As much as I'd made the most of being in New York, Ash had left me with the feeling that I'd ruined it for her, and that she'd never really given me a fair shot at getting it right in the first place. Like I was just supposed to know this stuff. Part of me's mad at myself because, well, I did know some of it and with a bit more thought. But before I even finished that sentence, I'm mad at her for not telling me directly and clearly on one of the bazillion occasions I'd asked. I'm mad at her because why couldn't she organise the things she wanted to do if she wanted to do them that much? I turned New York into yet another funny anecdote. But deep down, I wasn't laughing. Going back to work was no fun either. I lasted a few hours before the niggle in my back I picked up on the plane turned into a full-on muscle spasm. And I ended up with a week on kick-ass painkillers, which, in fairness, did wonders for both my back and my mind. I mean, it's just life with Ash and I, isn't it? Always got a good story, those pair, haven't they? I just wish they were someone else's story sometimes. And yet, somehow, even though every one of those stories makes you wonder how we're together, Ashley and I prepare to celebrate our 6-year anniversary. In spite of what you've heard, Ash and I put all of our efforts into the New York trip, so we had no real plans for our anniversary until my work announced that our regional ball was going to be held on the eve of our anniversary. Well, sorted. A quick upgrade to our room situation and boom. Anniversary treat done. I'd never bothered with the regional ball before. I mean, us drivers rarely did. But now I was part of the store proper, it was sort of implied that I ought to be going. I was going, but mostly because every single year, something so juicy always filtered its way back through the store's gossip network. I mean, some checkout girls dream of marrying a doctor, and some dream of marrying the regional manager. I'm not here to judge, just to gossip. But if I'm going to witness the drama firsthand, then I need to be dressed for the occasion. We already know that Ashley's going to look like a goddamn supermodel the moment she puts on any gorgeous evening dress. It is black tie, and my budget cannot stretch to a tuxedo. And if a suit is in my budget, it looks bloody terrible. Not to mention, I'm going through a little bit of a femming it up phase. I'd grown my hair out a bit and I've still got that Bieber brush over, if I'm honest. I'd started wearing a bit of makeup when I was delivering my training sessions. You know, the jacket I'd bought for New York came in at the waist. You know, my actual waist, not the pretend one where I normally leave my jeans. And those knee highs. I mean, they were knee highs for a start, which is a bit girly. I can't even imagine me buying them now. But obviously, I was feeling them then. I suspect shopping for an outfit for the ball had some influence. You know, knowing I wasn't going to find a dinner jacket that didn't look like I'd stolen it off my dad, I think I'd kind of softened the rest of my look, especially my hair, in order to just feel a bit more comfortable and confident in a more feminine outfit. I mean, I say more feminine, I was not wearing a dress. No way, no how. And praise the fashion gods, jumpsuits were in style. I mean, come on, it's just a girly boiler suit, isn't it? Small pair of heels, bit of a smoky eye, job done. I've still got the selfie I took in the lift at some point that night. I mean, I loved that photo. It's me, but a very different version of me. Like a rare externalised glimpse of the feminine that stays inside me. I mean, she's there. She's always there. It's just rare I want her on the outside, visible. I don't mind you knowing and glimpsing this side of me, but I can't wear it for long because it feels too vulnerable and I feel too exposed. And as fun as it can be, there's a very real happiness when the heels come off and the joggers go on. But it does, it feels good to try something different, to mix it up, to let other parts of you to the surface if you want to. I'm still a butch lesbian, even if I've got a smoky eye. And my ability to walk in heels would have reassured you of that if my makeup skills had you confused. I mean, come on, if you can watch a YouTube video on how to fix your car, you can watch one to figure out how to do a smoky eye for the first time in your life, if you feel like it. The only person who can revoke your butch card is you. Just so you know. Anyway, it was one of those work dos where everyone manages to get just the right amount of drunk. And those who overdid it managed to avoid public shame. Bravo, folks, bravo. Everyone is telling everyone how much they love each other, and Ash is patient as I drunkenly say goodbye to anyone and everyone, and I do mean everyone. The Last of Us stragglers are unceremoniously kicked out of the ballroom, and we're now loitering in the lobby. A pizza delivery man arrives, and obviously, he's here for Ash. All drunken nights must end with pizza. This one gets eaten. You're not making it through a lobby full of drunks who've only had the conference chicken and a lemon tart to eat since their meal deal lunch, with your pizza untouched. You are gonna share. Fact. As usual, like all couples do, we talked a big game about hotel sex. I mean, you always did, and then more often than not, we totally didn't. We were too drunk and too tired. Film and TV had lied to us all for years. hardly anyone wants to shag after a late night dinner or one too many drinks. I mean, we want to. It just doesn't feel that great if you're completely knackered or incredibly bloated. So my top tip, fuck first, then go out. For dinner, for drinks, for whatever. Sex first, then the rest. Plus, it does wonders for my normally non-existent appetite. But I have not learnt this lesson yet, and so I woke up hungover and without having had any of the hotel sex. I was going to need the mother of all fry-ups to deal with this. And so for our 6th anniversary, Ash and I had breakfast in the greasy spoon I'd taken her to during our early days of dating. Such romance. Such good fried bread. Ugh, the best. The Ashley who'd been with me last night was the one I adored spending time with. She'd been the life and soul, but in all the right ways, and everyone loved her. She charmed my colleagues, my friends, my boss, my boss's boss. Ashley was all kinds of good energy with an infectious smile, a bloody delight. Where was this Ashley when we were in New York, I thought. Shrugged it off, you know, ups and downs, that's life. After all, I'm no ray of fucking sunshine 24/7, let's be honest. Talking of the weather, and being British, it is a talent I possess, being able to converse about the meteorological possibilities of the day for hours. We found ourselves experiencing yet another decent snowfall. I mean, for the first 20 years of my life, snow was a rare event, often talked about, often overhyped, and then utterly underwhelming upon arrival. You'd be lucky if you saw more than a light dust in most years. Now it snows, and it snows properly. You'll get no climate change denial here, right? And bad back or not, snow demands to be played in. Snowmen should be built, sledging should take place, and walks to nowhere in particular should be undertaken. Just to hear the hush of the world, I love that. And then you go home for hot chocolate. And of course, we're in the full grip of Facebook at this point, right? So if you do something, your photos have got to be uploaded, statuses are updated. Ashley loves to talk to me via Facebook, even when we're sat on the same sofa. My notifications ping. Ashley's tagged me in her status, thanking me for reminding her to layer up and wrap up before we went out sledging for the day. Oh. So now she listens to my clothing advice. Won't somebody's deity give me strength? Then came a day I genuinely didn't truly believe would happen in my lifetime. I hoped, but I didn't think it would really happen. But on the 5th of February 2013, the Equal Marriage Bill was passed by the House of Commons. 400-175. Decisive, you could say. Though it was disappointing to know my own MP had been one of the 175 who'd voted against it. He'd replied to my letter asking him to support the bill, clarifying that although he believed gay people were equal, I feel like this was in quote marks, but even if it wasn't, he made it read that way. My MP believed civil partnerships more than covered our rights. But he understood I might disagree with him. At least the prick had some awareness. I'll give him that. Now in our house, this was both good news and bad news. Because as more than a few people pointed out, Ash and I were running out of excuses not to get the wedding in the diary. Meanwhile though, I am busy planning a different kind of celebration. You see, I am actually the older woman in this relationship. And now it's Ashley who's turning 30. I decided that the very least I could do for the woman who just took me to New York was to throw a kick-ass birthday party for her. Plus, if I'm honest, I thought it might help make up for some of the trip disappointment. So low-key is not Ashley's style. I wanted to make sure she could let her hair down and celebrate. But party planning is simultaneously like amazingly fun and actually awful. Like venues, transport to venues, the food, the drink, the entertainment, the invite, to surprise or not to surprise. So many questions. I had a million ideas, but I wasn't sure what to do. During dress selection for the regional ball, it all came together. Ashley was rooting through her side of the wardrobe 1 minute. The next, there's an explosion of feathers. From the depths of the rail, she drags out her burlesque outfit, followed by its accompanying feather boa. Ash holds it up against herself and twirls. God, I need an excuse to wear this again, she says. People, we have a theme. Okay, not so much a theme yet, but more of a starting point. But it all fell quickly into place after that. I am nothing, though, if not a wind-up merchant. And Ashley is getting sort of suspicious as I'm making all these plans and arrangements. So I start to invent lots of red herrings to throw her off the scent. In the midst of all of this, another Valentine's Day approaches, and whilst we're not in the habit of exchanging extravagant gifts, I do let Ashley know that it wouldn't kill her, you know, to get me a car. There are some moments when I realise I'm not just a carbon copy of my dad and that my mum has managed to get her influence in there too. Greeting cards is one of those areas. Ashley, however, decides to ignore the simple card suggestion and goes for the classic red roses delivered at work, which would have been lovely if I hadn't finished work 3 hours before they got delivered. I mean, but she does try. Bless her, and they did look gorgeous when I eventually got them. Speaking of looking gorgeous, I've finally abandoned the Bieber brush over and gone back to the well-established quiff. It feels like I'm myself again. No matter how many other hairstyles I try, the well-established quiff is me. Totally and utterly me. I am back on my game. Party planning is full swing, and there's been no house drama in like forever. You know, work's all right too. You know, if I have to go to work. It is all quiet on the Western Front. And then, on this particular night, Ash is out with her mates having a few drinks. I have an early night. I don't hear her come in. The next morning, I'm bright-eyed and bushy-tailed as I jump out of bed. Over to the window for my little look-see, what's occurring. And what is occurring is my beautiful car, Goldie, is cordoned off with police tape. She is covered with little yellow stands with numbers on them. Evidence markers, if I had to guess, because there are a lot of coppers in the street. And there's even a couple of what looked like detectives in suits walking the scene. One of them was wearing one of those trench coats slash macs, so you know they had to be a detective, right? And the whole street is full of the little yellow markers. They go all the way to the top of the road. I'm starting to think Goldie is not going anywhere anytime soon. Ashley wakes up. And I tell her what seems to be going on. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the street was cordoned off last night. I had to get escorted to the front door by armed police. With that, she just rolls over and goes back to sleep. I'm like, say what? An armed escort to the front door. But no more details. She's back to sleep. I text my boss a photo of my car looking like an extra from CSI, just to kind of insinuate I might be a bit late. I jump in the shower, living in the hope that maybe it'll all be sorted by the time I'm ready to leave. Which means, of course, that the moment I get out of the shower is the moment the police come knocking. So there I am, standing there, just my towel on, while a very polite policewoman explains that my car is now evidence, and I can't go anywhere near it until they knock again and tell me otherwise. I'll tell her no problem at all, but can she do me a favour and tell me what's happened? Turns out we've got a murder investigation taking place. One of the neighbours was stabbed to death and then the house was set on fire in an attempt to cover their tracks. However, whoever ran away was bleeding, apparently profusely, left a trail down the street, and took the opportunity to rest upon my car, leaving a bloody handprint and all, before they then took off into the woods, it is presumed. Right you are, I say, and close the front door. And then I lock it behind me. Between this and Jeremy Kyle bringing his trashy show on tour to our estate, it felt like the up-and-coming part of the area was, still to come. Hello, hello, you lovely lot. I hope life is treating you very well. And if it isn't, I hope you are treating yourself well. I can't thank you enough for listening and sharing the podcast. It continues to grow at a pace that astounds me on a daily basis. And it's all because of you guys listening and sharing and leaving your review. So a massive thank you for that. And if you've been meaning to leave a review, go on, do it now. Massively appreciate it. Don't forget, you can help keep the show ad-free by subscribing for as little as £1 a month. You can find the link on my Insta profile, at Well Established Lesbian, or go directly to ko-fi.com/Well Established Lesbian. I'll be back next week with another chapter. Thanks, as always, for the privilege of your time, and have a great week, whatever you're up to. Take care.